yet with all their regional images and variations, a common theme binds these tales together: a universal concern with fundamental issues about the world in which humans live. We encounter again and again, in a fantastic spectrum of forms, north and south, east and west, the story of the children of the sun, of the culture bringers, of the sacred four directions, of worlds piled on top of each other, of primordial waters, of perpetual destruction and recreation, of powerful heroes and tricksters. According to one author, all mythological systems spring from the same fundamental basis. The gods are the children of reverence and necessity, but their genealogy stretches still farther back. The following are the main basic belief structures. Animism: savage man believed that every surrounding object possessed life and consciousness. Trees, the wind, the river, etc. He believed that they spoke to him, warning him, guiding him. Even such things as light and darkness, heat and cold were given characteristics. The sky was seen as the All-Father and by cooperation with the Mother Earth, Research 227, all living things had sprung forth. Totemism, a step higher than the belief that inanimate objects and natural phenomena were endowed with the qualities of life and thought, animism. This concerned the high opinion placed on animals for their qualities and instinctive abilities. Various human attributes and characteristics were personified and even exaggerated in certain animals. If the Native American or the tribe coveted a certain quality, they would place themselves under the protection of the animal or bird which symbolized it. A tribe even acquired the nickname of the animal, thus the animal was considered to be a guardian. In return, that animal was not killed by the tribe. After many generations, the tribe could consider that animal as their direct ancestor, and all members of the species as blood relations. These rules eventually influenced the laws and customs of the tribe, thus the animal was considered a powerful guardian being. Fetishism, the belief that an object, large or small, natural or artificial, possessed consciousness, volition, and supernatural qualities, and especially magic powers, such as protection. It would seem that our belief in lucky charms etc. have descended from this belief, and thus modern man is not exempt. As has been said, the Native American intelligence regards all things, animals, water, the earth, trees, stones, the heavenly bodies, even night and day, light and darkness, as possessing animation and the power of volition. It is also the belief that many of these are under some spell or potent enchantment. The rocks and trees are confidently believed to be the living tombs of imprisoned spirits, so it is not difficult for a Native American to conceive an intelligence, more or less potent, in any object, no matter how uncommon. Indeed, the more uncommon, the greater the probability of its being the abode of some powerful intelligence. Fetishes could be small objects, such as small quartz crystals or feathers, and were often placed in tiny bags. Things that seemed unusual in any way were accepted as supernatural and lucky for the finder. Is this any different from the belief that a rabbit's foot is lucky? Nearly all the belongings of a shaman, or medicine man, are classified as fetishes. The idea in the mind of the original maker, 228. The legend of Star Crush, of the fetish, is usually symbolic, and is revealed only to one formerly chosen as heir to the magical possession, and pledged in his turn to a similar secrecy. This could explain Tuin's reverence for the objects in the wise man's hut. He assumed they possessed magic and were secrets guarded by the wise man. He felt he should not even be allowed to see them. The secrets of these objects, as well as the stories, were passed on only to the wise man's successor and not to the general populace. Tuin said this was because the knowledge had to be committed to memory and could not be distorted. Among the Algonquins, a peculiar type of fetish consisted of a mantle made from the skin of a deer and covered with feathers mixed with beadings. It was used by the medicine men as a mantle of invisibility, or charmed protective covering. This sounded similar to the wise man's costumes that he wore for the different festivals, especially the skin of the strange animal which Tuin had killed. This could have been considered as a fetish for the wise man because he knew it was unusual and thus might possess some special power. Fetishes could easily evolve into a god, but this was not the original intent. An idol is the abode of a god. A fetish, on the other hand, is the place of imprisonment of a subservient spirit, which cannot escape, and must serve the owner by bringing luck, protection and good fortune. Hunting was included in this. Fetishes which lost their reputations as bringers of good fortune usually degenerated into mere amulets of talismanic ornaments. It is agreed that certain Native American tribes have been using fetishes since prehistoric times, but the actual age of the oldest fetish is unknown. Nevertheless, it is known that the Zunis, for example, were making fetishes before the arrival of the Spanish missionaries. It is suspected that fetishes may have undergone a reduction in size during this period, 1692 to 1800, because of Spanish, Christian, intolerance of idolatry. It is a matter of record that the first Spaniards, attempting to stamp out heathen rituals, outlawed the Zuni's fetishes. As a consequence, the Zuni were forced to conceal them, research 229. With the result that the size was reduced to smaller objects that could be more readily hidden. It would appear that Yuin's tribe possessed some of these beliefs, but not all of them. They believed in animism because they thought all inanimate objects possessed a spirit, and that this spirit could talk to them and guide them. They also were careful not to offend these spirits or to call them up for frivolous reasons, as they believed they were very powerful. He was very reverent of the Mother Earth and the Moon. He also had a fetish, the stone that he carried in a small bag around his neck. He had been told by the wise man that it contained a spirit because he could see a spark within the stone. His tribe did not have the belief of totemism. During other regressions to Native American lifetimes, which I have preformed with other subjects, I have encountered this belief. The person, while under the influence of drugs, would spend several nights alone in the wilderness until they encountered their protective brother, an animal or bird. This belief would seem to have evolved later than Tuin's time, or to have been incorporated from the beliefs of the people who came later and interbred with his tribe. At that time the beliefs of the newcomers were incorporated and the legends of the old ones began to be contaminated and distorted. It would appear that the beliefs of animism and fetishism were basic, and totemism was added later, although Tuin did have the belief of apologizing to the animal before it was killed. There may have occurred an incorporation of this belief into the one about totem animals. I found that the Indian had no clear conception of a supreme deity. The Great Spirit, or the Great White Spirit, occasionally referred to by today's storytellers, seems to be a blending of Aboriginal concepts with the Christian idea of God. Each division of the race possessed its own word to signify spirit. This original Native American concept was practically the same as those among the primitive peoples of Europe and Asia. The Native American had a different view of good and bad. That which was good was everything that was to their advantage. Evil was that which, 230, the legend of Star Crush, injured or distressed them. Thus their gods had the same functions, there were no good or bad gods. It was as though the savage did not believe divine beings could be fettered by such laws as he himself felt bound to obey. This applied to the deities of all primitive races. They possessed no ideas of good and evil. The gods were only good to their worshippers inasmuch as they ensured them abundant crops or game, and only bad when they ceased to do so. The idea of the devil is foreign to all primitive religions. Early translators of the Bible found it was impossible to find any native word to convey the idea of a spirit of evil. The mythologies of the Native Americans also contain no place of punishment, any more than they possess any deities who are clearly malevolent towards humanity. Should a place of torment be discernible in any Native American mythology at the present day, it may unhesitatingly be classed as the product of missionary influence. When these myths were recorded, most of the American Indian tribes were already dispersed. Only among the Eskimo, Pueblo, and the Navajo peoples did the mythology represent a living religious cult. A few centuries of change had largely altered the religious observances of the other tribes into either social observances or folklore. In particular, the traditions of the Native Americans of the southeastern states had become the heritage of only a few old people. At the present day, the process has continued much further, and many Native Americans have found that the traditions have only been preserved through the work of the white ethnologists at the turn of the century, who made records of what survived. This does not mean that the myths have totally lost their power, but they are assuming more and more the nature of folktales. Some tribes still sing some of the ancient chants, and the religious dances are publicly performed, though probably largely for the benefit of the tourists. On the whole, the modern Native American thinks of the ancient traditions as echoes of a past which is no longer important. But the impact of the new culture has not totally destroyed the past. It seems to be a curious occurrence that in the early days of Christianity, whenever the Christians or missionaries came upon, research, 23i, other beliefs in their travels and their early conquering, they felt a compelling need to destroy the prevailing culture and religious beliefs and replace it with their own. This occurred many times throughout history, most notably was the destruction of the vast Alexandrian Library, and the total destruction of the Mayan and Aztec history and written languages. It may have been spurred on by the belief that Christianity was the only true religion and source of knowledge. But was it also a suspicion or a fear that something similar or greater might also exist in ancient or primitive cultures? When the first missionaries came to America, they were startled to find stories of creation and the flood that were too similar to the biblical accounts to be coincidence. Rather than accepting this as confirmation that the stories might have widespread historical basis, they considered them a threat and labeled them heathen. If others had a similar belief system, then theirs could not be unique. Their solution was to destroy anything they saw as conflicting. Most of this ancient knowledge was then destroyed or corrupted in the name of religion. Thus, through the centuries, great storehouses of irreplaceable information was lost forever under the mistaken cover of the Christian conversion of so-called primitive cultures. I was amazed to find an abundance of creation myths among the Native American folklore. The mythologies of the Red Man are infinitely more rich in creative and deluge myths than any other race in the two hemispheres. Many of these are similar to European and Asiatic myths of the same genre, while others show great originality. The creation myths of the various American Indian tribes differ as much from one another as do those of Europe and Asia. In some we find the great gods molding the universe, in others we find them merely discovering it. Still others lead their people from subterranean depths to the upper earth. In many myths we find the world produced by the All-Father Sun, who thickens the clouds into water which becomes the sea. In many other Native American myths we find the wind brooding over the primeval ocean in the form of a bird. In other stories, amphibious animals dive into the waters and bring up sufficient mud to form a beginning of the new earth. This, 232, the legend of Star Crush, is a theme that has a common connection with the Hindu myths. The theme of primeval water covering a not yet created earth is perhaps the most prevalent, found in every area except that of the Eskimo. In all the creation myths, the order of creation is always the same: the world covered with water, then land, plants, animals, and finally humans. A creation myth may involve the mere statement that the creator made all the animals. Repeatedly the legends say man was created from the soil of the earth. In a Yuma creation legend there is even an episode where a trickster appears to the first woman and tries to get her to disobey the creator. These myths closely resemble the story in Genesis. Many of the Native American flood legends center on a man and his wife building a raft and taking animals on board. Another example is of a number of animals escaping in a canoe. In some tribes, the people escape the deluge by climbing onto the back of a giant turtle rather than a boat. Some of these tales relate that it rained for 40 days, and toward the end of the time a bird, usually a raven, flew out to see if it could locate land. Several tribes have their own version of Mount Ararat, using different names, where the people and animals landed. In several traditions, the flood came because of the wickedness of the people. These are the types of legends that greatly disturbed early missionaries because they could not logically explain the similarity to biblical accounts. It would appear that the more complicated creation stories of Tuin's time were put aside in favor of the simpler and more entertaining children's stories, apparently because they were easier to explain and understand. When these traditions of the North American Indians are compared with those of Middle and South America, as well as the traditions and records of the Eastern Hemisphere, it forms a very strong argument in favor of both the truth of the biblical account and the unity of the race. Some scientists have objected that perhaps these traditions were not handed down from former ancestors, but were received from early traders and teachers. But many tribes will even now, research 233, distinguish between the traditions of their ancestors and the teachings of the first Europeans who came here. Although the Aztecs, cousins of the Navajos and latecomers to the Mexican Mid-Valley, Olmecs and Mayans did not have a system of writing as we know it when Cortes invaded central Mexico, they had a way of representing events by pictographs, similar to the Egyptian hieroglyphics, and this flood event was recorded. Hence we must either conclude that all the traditions had little or no foundation, which would be absurd, or that there were a large number of floods which would be almost as absurd. For in that case the tradition of one flood in each tribe could not have been preserved so distinctly, especially when a bird of some kind, and a branch of some tree, are often mentioned in connection with it. The other conclusion is that there was one great flood, one so great that most of the descendants of those saved have preserved a tradition of it. If this is so, all must have descended from the few who were saved. Another common belief in the legends is that in the beginning the animals, fish, insects, trees and rocks could talk. People could understand and converse with them. They could understand each other because they had a common language and lived in friendship. Some of today's medicine men still claim to understand the language of certain animals. Just as trees, ponds, clouds and rocks are thought of as living beings, so the sun, moon, and stars in their firmament are depicted in Native American mythology as alive and endowed with human passions and yearnings to anthropomorphize. The sun, the father of light who begets all living things upon Mother Earth, the illuminator of the primordial darkness, is life-giver as well as destroyer. The great Earth Mother concept is common to all mythologies. There are many legends about the bringing of light and fire. Another version of this concerns the coming of the sun. The people apparently had lived in darkness, and when they first saw the sun they were afraid and cowering from the light they turned away from it. This is also similar to the story in the Lost Books of the Bible when, 234, the legend of Star Crush, Adam and Eve first saw the sun. They were terrified and thought that it would surely burn them and they could not live in its light. These stories give the impression that the first people came from somewhere where the sun did not exist, or perhaps did not exist as fiercely as it does here. Could these legends have a connection with the Old One's spaceship and the aliens emerging into the light of the sun after being closed up in the craft for generations? Native American tribes had various ways of computing time. Some of them relied upon the changes in season and the growth of crops for guidance as to when their annual festivals and seasonal celebration should take place. Others fixed their systems of festivals on the changes of the moon and the habits of animals and birds. It was, however, upon the moon that most of them depended for information regarding the passage of time. Most of them assigned 12 months to the year, while others considered 13 a more correct number. The Kiowa reckoned the year to consist of 12 1/2 moons, the other half being carried over to the following year. Some of the Dakota tribes reckoned their years as consisting of 12 lunar months, observing when 30 moons had waned to add a supernumerary one, which they termed the lost moon. There was no division into weeks. Days were counted by sleeps, and times of the day were determined by the movement of the sun. The chief reason for the computation of time was the correct observance of religious festivals. These were often of a highly elaborate nature, taking many days in their celebration. They consisted for the most part of a preliminary fast, followed by symbolic dances or magical ceremonies, and concluding with a gluttonous orgy. Most of these observances bear great similarity to one another, and visible differences may be accounted for by circumstances of environment or seasonal variations. When Europeans first came into contact with the Algonquian race, it was observed that they held regularly recurring festivals to celebrate the ripening of fruits and grain, and more irregular feasts to mark the return of wildfowl and the hunting season in general. The winter was when the old people told again all the tales of research. 235. Glory, the wonderful traditions of the past, which have been handed down from generation to generation. In the winter the long, dark nights would be whiled away in song and story. The medicine man was trained in his youth to memorize and fast for days at a time to conjure his visions. His memory became very retentive, and by these men and women old legends were carried down through generations. There are many Native American legends dealing with the stars. They usually involved people traveling up to the sky and being transformed into stars. This is a common thread weaving through many legends. Occasionally the legends speak of the star people returning to Earth to see their families or for various reasons. This may be parallel to the Greek stories of the gods who came down from the higher regions in order to help the poor shepherds at the beginning of their living experience, a story tradition later handed down to the Romans. At some time the gods, for one reason or another, saw their job as done, and went elsewhere. Usually in the Native American legends they come to Earth because they are homesick, especially if they have been taken against their will to dwell in the sky worlds. There seemed to be a fascination among several tribes with the constellation of the Pleiades, maybe because it is an unusual feature in the night sky. Maybe this was why they had to have a legend or myth to explain it, as they did for other star features. Or maybe it was because deeply embedded in their subconscious was the knowledge that their forebearers came from that distant place. The Pleiades were their favorite constellation and they took little note of the others except the Great Bear. The myths are varied, often dealing with seven girls who were taken to the sky by various means. Because the Native Americans saw the group of stars shimmering, they describe it as the girls, or children, dancing. Among tribes along the Atlantic coast, the Pleiades were called the Seven Stars, or literally, they sit apart from others, or are grouped together. On Nondagos, there they dwell in peace. The Blackfoot call the Pleiades the Seven Perfect Ones. In South America, the cult of the Pleiades was most highly. 236. The legend of Star Crush developed. Here, this most wonderful group of stars was watched with constant interest and homage. It marked the seasons, the time to sow and reap, and the most important feasts and ceremonies. The ancient Mexicans, in a national festival, kindled the sacred fire as the Pleiades approached the zenith. So did the Tuscans of the southwestern plains. The Arapahoes, Kiowas, Uncas and Incas regarded this constellation with reverence. The Adipones of Brazil and some other nations deemed that they sprang from the Pleiades. In some California tribes it was deemed calamitous to look at them heedlessly. The Pole Star or North Star, also called Polaris, was always the Native Americans' guide, called the star that never moves, and the Northern Lights, Aurora Borealis, were an indication of coming events. If they were white, frosty weather would follow; if yellow, disease and pestilence; while red predicted war and bloodshed, and a mottled sky in the springtime was ever the harbinger of a good corn season. Many of the star legends claim the sun, moon or some other major star as the parent of various heroes, thus claiming celestial descent or origin. Instead of defining their origin as people from the stars, it was broadened into describing the parent or culture bringer as the larger celestial object itself. This could indicate the deterioration of the stories over many generations, a simplifying of a more complicated story. A dropping away of elements in the storytelling that were confusing or considered unnecessary in the subsequent retelling. Much North American Indian star lore has been lost, for several reasons. First, determination of ceremonies was dependent on secret knowledge, revealed only to the priests, and told by them only to the ones they trained to succeed them. Second, many constellations known to Native Americans did not have European equivalents. Third, many of the earliest recorders who worked with Native Americans were city people, unfamiliar with the astronomy of their own culture. Strange unearthly figures often are featured in the stories. One of the Onondaga's myths concerns a very old man who came to them several times. They had never seen anyone like him before. Research. 237. He was described as being dressed in white feathers, and having white hair that shone like silver. In this tale, several children rose into the air, and upon reaching the sky they became the Pleiades. a curious mention of a magic stone turned up in a book from the 1800s. The tribe supposedly had a magic transparent stone which the medicine man would consult. It was jealously guarded and even the people of the tribe were not allowed to see it. The writer could not describe it further, and he did not say which tribe hid it. The Migration from Shinna, by Captain G. Palmer Crittenden, 1879. There are stories in several tribes about a supernatural canoe that flies and requires to be fed as it travels. Simshian, a legend about a self-moving canoe with a monster head at each end. These heads eat whatever crossed the bow or the stern of the canoe. This idea of the feeding of a self-moving canoe occurs in many other connections, where the load is used for feeding the canoe. In one story, the canoe had great magical powers, and was propelled by a certain song. When it was flown, it would quickly rise very high into the sky. It was described as shooting upward like an arrow. The magic song could also make the canoe descend and stop. In another story, when the canoe is taken ashore, it is transformed into stone. Could these legends be memories of the original spacecraft which was powered by feeding on the material it carried on board? Also, could the magic song that propelled it be the memory of the propulsion system? When it came to Earth, it was transformed and couldn't fly anymore. In some cases, there is a belief existing which stands alone and is not made a part of the folk tales, such as the Thunderbird, whose awesome power ignited the lightning. Could the Thunderbird legends have originated from the Native Americans seeing spacecraft? A favorite type of myth in America is one in which a culture hero comes and teaches the people, for example, to make basket an art unknown till that time. Or, he teaches them how to plant crops. The culture hero stands for the strength, wisdom, and perception of humans. He is not the power above, but he is the intermediary between that power and mankind. 238. The legend of Star Crush. Various tribes have the legend of Glooskap, or Glasskap, as the culture bringer. The tradition of Glooskap is that he came to this country from the east far across the Great Sea, that he was a divine being, though in the form of man. Glooskap was the friend and teacher of the Native Americans. All they knew of the arts he taught them. He taught them the names of the constellations and stars. He taught them how to hunt and fish, and cure what they took, how to cultivate the ground, how to plant, and train them in all forms of husbandry. All that the Native Americans knew of what was wise and good he taught them. His canoe was a granite rock which turned into an island. In one of his travelings he found another tribe of people with a different language. He stayed with them 5 or 6 years to give them rules. When Glooskap went away, he went toward the west because his work was completed. It is believed he might return one day. He never grows old, so he will last as long as the world. The place where he lives is in a beautiful land in the west. The journey to that fair region far away is long, difficult, and dangerous. The way back is short and easy. There are many tales and legends of brave young men who attempted the journey. There are other personages in the legends with Glooskap, who are mighty, but Glooskap is supreme. Many culture heroines are mentioned in the legends. They are known by many names, and they brought important things to the people: buffalo, salt, corn, and the knowledge of planting, pottery and basketry, and flint to spark the first cooking fire. In one legend, Corn Mother gave the Native Americans maize to plant and taught them many things before she returned to the sky. One day a wonderful man was seen beside the lake, who taught them more things. Then Corn Mother stood beside him to teach them how to grow maize. She told them of the stars, of the planets, sun and moon and the gods in the sky. Then a dog was sent from the sun with medicine and told the people about the diseases of humans and how to cure them. Afterwards the man and Corn Mother left the people. None of these cultural advances occurred spontaneously in the research. 239 stories. They were always brought to the people or given by someone. For example, the myth recounting the adventures and career of some culture hero may include the statement that he taught the people all the arts. The legend of the Bahana, white brother, or white savior of the Hopi, is firmly established in all the villages. He came up with people from the underworld and was accredited with great wisdom. He set out on the journey to the rising sun, promising to return with many benefits for the people. Ever since, his coming has been anticipated. It is said that when he returns, there will be no more fighting and trouble, and he will bring much knowledge and wisdom with him. The Spanish priests were allowed to establish their missions in the Hopi country because of this legend, for the people thought that at last the Bahana had come. Since that time, they have suffered many similar disappointments, but they are still expecting the arrival of the true Bahana.